Sometime in 1968, I discovered in a magazine a series of poems by an American poet named Linda Krenis entitled The Reason Why. I set all three of these poems for voice and strings, and one of them in particular has become a personal favourite. Here's the poem. In watermelon hours, when being was as easy as random daisies grew, the sun told time without ticking, and rain was fun if it fell on you. But that was all before Pandora found the swarm of practicalities that taught her umbrellas were essential and flowers didn't really matter. I still recall the feelings this poem evoked in me. It seemed to speak of my own personal point of view and to demand a musical response. The result was probably my first composition which, despite all of the obvious influences, possessed a quality of expression distinctly my own. In this 1969 recording, Anthea Moller sings with the Lindsay String Orchestra, conducted by Dobbs Franks.
Thank you.
when I look back on this song, I realise that nearly all of the works I've subsequently completed have referred, either directly or by implication, to these poetic images and to the overall message of the poem. For example, in the electroacoustic work Sleep Exposure, completed after many revisions in 1990, the image of the sun told time without ticking is rendered with a paradoxical twist. Sleep Exposure recalls a dream concerning the death of my grandfather and uses, amongst other things, spoken description of the dream and an old acetate recording of a favourite song of his. The techniques employed in making this work were graphic and literal. It ends with the gradually approaching sound of a ticking clock, representing a much more mundane, but somehow more ominous variety of time-telling. Here are the final few minutes of the work. The road to the post office changed into a kind of arcade, and coming towards us was a procession, a religious procession of some kind. It was full of dark red. We didn't know what it was. "Good old Robe Street," he said, remembering his life and giving it to me. "Ah, it's all in a name." I've been working in the field of electroacoustic music since 1970, and over the years have accumulated a large collection of audio field recordings. Any sound or sonic environment which has caught my ear, I've tried to record. The range is very wide, from the sounds of people in interaction, often those people in my immediate domestic proximity, to the sounds of the natural environment. In these circumstances, rain is often not much fun at all when it falls on you and your equipment. However, the sound of rain, in its infinite variety, is one of the most evocative of all sounds. I've used it, again in a literal way, in a just-completed work entitled On Listening In. This is an electroacoustic work concerned with all kinds of sound worlds, often in surreal or super-real relationships. Although it doesn't employ a singer and string orchestra, I think, in its own way, This work expresses many of the feelings contained in that 1968 poem. In this example, from the beginning of the work, a recording of gentle rain accompanies a variety of scenarios.
As the final movement of the symphony continued, I was held by the absolute inevitability of the tonal progressions. And as the work drew to a close, like some enormous wave approaching the shore, a realization overtook me. All of nature and humankind, everything that had been and would ever be, seemed embodied in the symmetry of that final cadence.
You may have noticed that the first sound we hear is a spoken memory, one of a number narrated in the course of the work. Words are a common thread in so much of my output, either settings of poetry, as in the early songs, or the use of speech in the electroacoustic works and performance installations. The swarm of practicalities found by Pandora in Linda Quinnis's poem are familiar to us all. On realizing the world is an essentially hostile environment, swarming with all kinds of unmentionable attitudes and irrational events, one's life becomes a continual round of psychological pest control, constantly attempting to keep these deadly realizations at bay. One of the first electroacoustic works I made was a setting of an E.E. Cummings poem entitled "You Gotta." It's a hard-hitting, phonetically spelled exposure of racial bigotry. In this work, I have used transformed fragments of the text to surround the spoken poem with a texture of agitated phonetic antics. Are these the sounds which might have accompanied the opening of Pandora's box?
I don't know if it's better to rig it up, you know, and then it's a civilizer. get rid of. You don't know nothing. Listen, bud, listen. Damn goddamn. Well, yellow bastards. We're going to civilize them.
As Linda Quinnis's poem indicates, if we don't wish to be rained upon, we use umbrellas as a form of protection. Similarly, we often use some form of emotional or psychological umbrella to protect us from the fallout of difficult decisions or experiences. The death of a person close to one can be a most corrosive experience. It certainly tends to make the watermelon hours of childhood seem a paradise of warmth and security. In March of 1991, my father died, and very soon afterwards, I found myself making a work which ultimately functioned as his requiem. The work was a visual one, involving projected videotape images, transparencies, and a four-channel soundtrack. As part of the soundtrack, I decided to use a recording of a setting of a Wilfred Owen poem taken from an early 1976 oratorio of mine entitled Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori, roughly translated, it is good and right to die for one's country. Dad was a returned serviceman who, rather than dying in battle, had met his fate under the invasion of cancer. But somehow Owen's intense images of a dying boy soldier seemed appropriate for this old soldier. I saw his round mouth's crimson deepen as it fell, like a sun in his last deep hour. Watched the magnificent recession of farewell, clouding, half gleam, half glower, and a last splendour burn the heavens of his cheek. And in his eyes the cold stars lighting, very old and bleak, in different skies. Here are the final few bars of this setting. The baritone is Michael Tatchell, with soloists from the Canterbury Trust Orchestra, conducted by Dobbs Franks. Notice the voice and instruments fade into what seems like a quite electronic sound. It is in fact a transformed recording of a wind or aeolian harp. Any object in the natural environment will vibrate when excited by the passage of air over its surface. When that object is a string or line of an appropriate length, thickness and tension, it'll go into sectional vibration in an integrated relationship with the air velocity. This often produces wonderful musical results, as in this field recording. For me, this sound is the absolute embodiment of the final image of Linda Quenis's poem, namely the flower, an organic object, obedient to the laws of nature, a symbol of hope, idealism, and the fragility of innocence. Of the various modes of expression I've worked with over the years, conventional musical resources, sculptural performance and installation, videotape and photographic media, it's the electroacoustic medium which remains my central preoccupation. Finding ways of harnessing the ever-renewing technology in the search for a truly meaningful language of expression is a pretty tall order. But amongst the many frustrations, one sometimes experiences the odd, quiet victory. So finally, I offer the closing section of On Listening In. It begins with another memory, before blending some of the opposing paradoxes in the work. Perhaps, after all, umbrellas don't really matter, and flowers are essential.
The lake lay absolutely still in the darkness. There was no sound from where the huge body of water touched the land, only the murmuring of the mist swallowing the hills on the far shore.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.